Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A Radio Info Raw Edit podcast. The conversations behind our reports.
Kieran Davis, welcome. You've recently released the full year HT&E figures. It was a pretty tough year last year for the company, wasn't it?
It was a tough year for everybody, Steve. Yeah, it was. But, you know, I think the second half was actually a lot better than what we thought it could have been when we stared down a very dark barrel in sort of April, May time last year. You know, our revenue in the second half was down 14%. Compared to nearly 30% for the first half. So there was not necessarily a recovery, but there was a huge improvement quarter three, quarter four, versus that horrible quarter two that we had where radio revenue was back 46%.
Just walk me through the structure of the HT&E company, because radio is reasonably healthy, but you're very exposed to outdoor as well.
Yeah, so the history of HT&E, obviously, it used to be APN Media. Back 5-6 years ago, 80% of its revenue was in newspaper. It had $450 million of debt, and we spent a lot of time fixing the balance sheet, getting out of sort of challenged industries, which obviously newspapers is, as we know, and really focusing on particularly our audio strategy over the last 12-18 months. So today, you know, for the year last year, we just did under $200 million of revenue. We did nearly $50 million of EBITDA. Majority of that, obviously, coming from ARN, our radio business. But significantly, you know, we've got, you know, very, very strong balance sheet. We've got net cash of about $110 million. We have a very good radio business that is very cash generative, as we know. And within the portfolio now, we have a number of opportunities to really drive some significant shareholder value, particularly out of a technology business called Soprano, which is an instant messaging business, if you like, in the CPaaS world, where we've announced that we are appointed Macquarie Capital to look at how we can extract value from that business at this point, because the CPaaS market is performing incredibly well at the moment.
What kind of a business is it?
I suppose, to put it very simply, if you're getting a one-time password for logging into, say, your online bank, that's the type of technology that Soprano does. But that's a very simplistic view of quite a complicated platform that it has. It operates in the SMS, it operates in voice, it operates, it has a lot of platform integration with WhatsApp, Viber. So it's really at the forefront, if you like, of marketing communication between businesses, governments, and telcos and their customers. It did over 1 billion messages last year. Clients include, say, AT&T in America, Singtel in Asia, Telstra here in Australia, NHS, BT in the UK, and for instance, with COVID, obviously the first 6 months of last year, you know, NHS were sending out millions of text messages every day. So the business has seen tremendous commercial uplift in performance, in revenue, and what we call gross profit over the last 2 to 3 years. And it's an exciting time for that industry, because there's probably a period of consolidation coming through. So lots of opportunities for Soprano. But, you know, as a business and as a board, we sat down and we had a look at it, and, you know, we don't want to be in the business for the next 5 or 10 years. CPaaS is not our core strength, if you like. And as I say, with valuations as good and as strong as they are today in that market, then, you know, we're looking at what opportunities are there, because there's a real opportunity to drive some significant shareholder return for HT&E. And then we can look to see how we would deploy, you know, whatever cash we achieve through the sale of that 25% that we have.
I remember last time we talked, which was, I guess, halfway through last year, and one of your strategies was to talk a lot to your staff and communicate what was going on. Do you think that's been a successful strategy in just keeping everybody in the business on target and knowing what's happening?
I like to think so. We had to make some tough decisions and had to let some people go, which wasn't pleasant, and, you know, some people who've been in the business for a long time and have been great contributors. So that was tough. JobKeeper helped to sort of stave off more severe redundancies that we would have been looking at, to be fair. And just on that, while I'm sort of referencing JobKeeper and the federal government, I think it was great to see the federal government's share of spend increase on radio quite substantially in 2020, and hoping that continues into 21. But, you know, those two actions from the federal government really helped radio last year, and that was good to see. But back to your initial question, yeah, regular communication was important. Honesty of communication was important. You know, we look back and think, what would we change, what we do differently, and honestly, there probably isn't much. And I'd like to think that most staff would sort of look back and feel as though they were kept involved. Yes, it was a very unsettling time, but we did as much as we could to keep people focused on the positive side of things and keep the business performing well. And the business did perform well. So, you know, I think we must have got something right.
How many people lost their jobs in the end?
It was just over 30.
Uh-huh. Any idea of increasing staff again?
You know, last year we brought in, you know, a few technology projects that looked at our efficiencies, and that probably means some of the roles that we let go, we don't have to hire back. But we certainly are making investments, particularly in marketing of our brands, which you'll see back, you know, out and about now, which is good to see, and also then improving further our digital and data content creation and monetization opportunities. We did a 20% pay cut across the board. That was initially planned for 6 months. We cut it back to 5 months, and everybody is now back on full pay. And, you know, that was again, really hard to do, and a lot of people made a lot of sacrifices. But at a time when we implemented this, which was sort of middle of April, late April, you know, we were really looking at some very troubling numbers if the pandemic had kept going as it was. And, you know, I think we spoke about that 3 or 4 week period when there was an incredible amount of cancellations pulled from radio, that pretty much the revenue book was empty for the rest of the year. So we have to take that decision, unfortunately. I think there was a perception out there that radio was going to suffer the same fate as out of home, in terms of people not being in the car and not being able to travel to work, therefore they weren't going to listen to radio. Those of us in the industry would strongly believe and would have known that wasn't going to be the case, that our content is engaging enough and strong enough and local enough and live enough and creates enough of an emotional bond with our audience that radio listenership was going to switch to whoever audiences were, and that happened to be in the home, and it happened to be increasingly on more mobile devices, on desktops, on smart speakers, because audiences will search out and consume our content from really good talent that we have, and we knew that was going to happen, but, you know, we took a little bit more convincing in the ad market to sort of reinforce that, which we did quite well in the end.
Yeah, actually, I think collectively as an industry, the Australian radio industry has done a hell of a lot to study those changes and then to communicate it. You know, CRA has done a very good job.
I think one of the best things we did was when the four commercial directors from the radio network got together and collectively went out to trading directors, heads of agencies, CMOs, talking about the power of radio. That was really well received and a very strong message from the four sales direct commercial directors.
Well, let's dwell on those audience changes that were noticed during this time, which you pointed out. Do you think they're going to stick? Is there a permanent change in audience consumption habits and the devices they use, or is it going to drift back?
It's going to change. It's going to increase. It's actually quite exciting because it means that, you know, radio will now become much more, the extension of radio content, if you like, will become much more pervasive because, you know, more and more people are listening to catch-up podcasts. You don't have to be where that is to listen to radio now. More and more people are getting used to listening to live radio on the mobile phone, on iHeartRadio. And increasingly, as people sign up and register for iHeartRadio in particular, whether to listen to live radio or listen to a podcast or listen to a specific artist, you know, that level of data that we can have means that we can increasingly become much more personalized in the content we are delivering to that audience, which is still one of the criticisms or sort of concerns that media buyers have about radio, is that its one-to-mass reach is very strong and the reach is very good, but increasingly, as we move to a more addressable ID planning process, that radio has a challenge trying to drive those first-party data. And what we've seen is, you know, people are not afraid to sign up to iHeartRadio. They're not afraid to be to be sent notifications around other forms of audio that are available. And I think that's tremendously exciting when you match that with the fact that our core radio product is still as strong, if not growing, more than ever.
Your point about people signing up, not being afraid to sign up, I think is an important one. And I think it's about trust. Probably they trust iHeart and ARN, so they're willing to give a certain amount of their data, and they know that you won't be scraping all of their internet habits along the way to gather further data about them. So I think that radio is well positioned in that respect, because it's a trusted medium and people will trust us as an industry with certain amounts of data, whereas they're getting more and more suspicious of the digital industries.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, and that element of trust is one of the key attributes that we see from advertisers as well, in terms of the trust that our audience have with our talent is a tremendous advantage when compared to the question marks that are still being asked over the placement of ads and product in global social platforms that are there. You know, even looking at Facebook last week and you know, the pulling of out of Australia, I think that's backfired in some respect on them, because, you know, what it's actually done is strengthen the resolve of operators and media owners to say, well, we can't just be reliant on one platform. We have to make our content available across as many platforms as possible, so that our audience can consume it and we're much more in control. So, you know, I think the trust thing is very important, but increasingly we will be able to drive, you know, much deeper content engagement with audiences as a result of having digital platforms like iHeartRadio. You know, one of the great examples is if we have the Premier New South Wales in studio with Jonesy and Amanda, you know, we're sending push notifications out to our audience. They tune in 20 minutes. So we're reaching people in an environment whereby they're not listening to radio, and we're hopefully driving people into the radio environment. Then we go back 2 hours later, and if we see that people haven't actually had a chance to listen, we can send them out a push notification. Sorry, you missed this morning's interview, but here's the podcast of it. So that's great engagement that we get, which is extending the consumption of our content beyond live broadcast in an FM environment, and obviously increasing monitoring opportunities as well.
Yeah, and I think all media companies are realising they need to be in more control of their relationship with their audience. I've seen the ABC promoting the ABC News app rather than their messenger service on Facebook. Most media companies now are pushing their audience to a direct sign up with them, like you have on iHeart.
And again, like, we have our content available on over 65 devices in Australia now. So it's about making it as broad as possible and as easy as possible for us to be consumed, because absolute choice of content consumption now rests, as we know, with consumers. They choose when, where, how they listen to content, and it's not the preserve of radio to be able to dictate when that happens. So we have to move with the times, and I think radio has done a very successful job of doing that, and is continuing to push the boundaries, really, with again, apps like iHeart.
Well, you've been very successful with iHeart. Just the last couple of weeks, your competition SCA has come to the party with Listener. Is it going to give you a run for your money?
Obviously, from an iHeart perspective, you know, we have an exclusive license until 2036. We pay a non-material, if you like, license fee for that. We own the content creation that we can do. We own the monetization of it. But at the back end of that, what we also get is the wealth of knowledge and depth of a global platform like iHeartRadio, which can be localized into this market. You know, they have, you know, hundreds of developers working on that. We're on the same roadmap as the States. And remember, it's been downloaded about 150 million times in the US already. We have access to a wealth of content which we're only just starting to delve into and roll out here in Australia. And we have not also access to the guide in terms of trends that they're seeing over there, how they're monetizing it better, how they're rolling it out with their radio assets, what else is coming down the road. The AI intelligence and the algorithms behind it are extraordinary. So, you know, we have the freedom of exclusive platform here in Australia that we've used for the last 5 years. We've learned an enormous amount. And it's backed by a global platform with all the advantages that brings. So we're quite comfortable with the product that we have and how competitive that's going to be in this market. There's no doubt that you know, what we're seeing is that trend of growth in digital audio is not coming from broadcast radio. It's coming from that 50% pie of advertising Australia, which is digital. You know, radio has been a consistent 7.5-8% of advertising in Australia for a long time. I see that continuing, but I see us increasingly looking to aim our product at the digital ad market, which is, you know, taking hopefully from Facebook, Google, YouTube, Spotify, whoever's there, because we have, you know, from our perspective, we've built a technology stack and a trading platform that's comparable to any other operator that's here operating from an international scale. We've got, you know, 1.9 million registered users, of which 1.1 are active monthly. We're putting a lot of effort into increasing that aggressively over the next 12 and 18 months. So I actually think the future is quite bright for radio operators and ourselves, because we've got a great core product where radio listening is growing. The advantages of radio advertising in terms of its immediacy, its flexibility, its ability to drive a call to action, particularly in a retail environment, remain as strong as ever, and the trust that we spoke about. And increasingly, we've got a digital audio product that, although not material at the moment, and remember, the podcast market is not significantly high at the moment, but it will grow over the next 2 to 3 years. But there's a pie of revenue that we can start tapping into, which will compensate the radio piece. So I think the future for us is exceptionally strong.
What about ratings? We'll soon see the results. You've got fairly stable presenter lineups around the country that are pretty consistent with past years. Anything to highlight in the programming that you expect to see in ratings when the first results come out?
I would think that, you know, from our perspective, we still think there's opportunity for our KISS 101.1 brand in Melbourne. Jason PJ are doing great content, and, you know, we think there's still growth to come there. We have a stable of content, that of talent that we're exceptionally happy with. We extended all our contracts early toward the end of 2019. So, you know, and sometimes that stability of audience and stability of talent is a key to driving good ratings. So, you know, we expect to remain as competitive as ever. And the radio industry is very competitive, and that's a good thing because it pushes us all every day. But from our perspective, we're very pleased with the stable of content, of talent that we have.
Have you been talking to Facebook and Google? Are you expecting to ink any deals and get some money from them as a result of the new media bargaining code?
We have met with one of them and yet to meet the other one. And yes, we would be expecting to sort of, based on what we've heard so far, to drive some revenue from them. But I go back to my point earlier on, we're not beholden to any one particular platform, and we never will be, because we have to make it as broad as possible in terms of content consumption.
As an audio business, search is very difficult in audio. What's your thoughts on, you know, how much you should get from Google and whether Google delivers the kind of traffic to an audio company that it might deliver to a text-based newspaper company?
Yeah, obviously the scales are a lot different, you know, and news items you would imagine would be a lot, obviously it is a lot stronger. So, you know, I'm not going to go into the detail of what we're thinking from a Google Facebook perspective in terms of monetary side, but I will say again that we're not beholden to them either.
Well, I think that's a very important position for any media company in Australia to be taking, as we've seen their behaviour over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I just think it strengthens the resolve of media owners here to you know, to look at how we distribute our news, our content, to make sure that you know, you're not reliant on one platform, and that is probably going to be a good thing for those publishing businesses, but although tricky in the short term, I accept.
I guess the last thing to think about is the role of radio in keeping people's spirits up. I think it's played a big role here in Australia and right across the world because of those things you were mentioning before, you know, the personal relationship and the trust between audiences and the personalities on air.
Absolutely. And what we saw during COVID was that people were still listening to breakfast radio at 6 in the morning because they wanted that sense of routine. They wanted that sense of normality, a sense of connection, sense of community. Magnificent strength for radio because it is a very uplifting medium. It is a very engaging medium. It's a very sticky medium. And we should never lose sight of that fact about how powerful radio is. In an ever-increasingly digital world, get that. But our radio is still as strong as ever from an audience perspective. And so long as we continue to invest in talent, invest in promotion of radio, and invest in the distribution of that content, then I think the future is extremely bright.
Kieran Davis, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave. Good to talk to you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.